Consumers are paying more money for the same cars, and this year, a growing number will lose them to repossession.
Hardship itself is not a defense to the contract.
What's driving the increase? Plus,
it's just the frustration that you're not able to do it like an able-bodied person.
You may walk right past them without a second glance. Now, the lifts on Milwaukee's Riverwalk are breaking down. What's being done to make the riverfront accessible to all? From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson. I'm joined by Contact 6's Jenna Sachs. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Brian.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, April 26th, or release on Thursday, April 27th. And Jenna, we're talking about two of your recent Contact 6 reports today. One about a purchase that cost tens of thousands of dollars. The other about something that's, well, should be free for everyone, but it's broken. So let's start with your story on auto repossessions. Data analysts are saying the number of repossessions will climb this year, and I think it's not even just a Wisconsin thing. It seems like it may be going on all over the country. Why is that?
You're right. It's not just a Wisconsin thing, and there are a lot of factors playing in here. First of all, there is a very competitive auto market still. Cars are still more expensive than they were before the pandemic disrupted the supply chain. Some dealers are even charging markups on certain vehicles, which is legal as long as it's disclosed. And prices for new and used cars remain well above what they were 4 years ago. And in the used car market, it's especially tough. It's not a great time to buy a car unless you have a trade-in. On top of that, we have consumers dealing with inflation. So people who bought cars in 2021 in 2022 may find their cars especially hard to afford. On top of that, and this is another big thing, lenders are not as lenient as they were during the pandemic. During that time, many reined in their repossessions. They were more willing to work with consumers and accommodate them in different ways. Now they're returning to their old ways and their old practices. And on top of that, consumers facing hardships no longer have things like government stimulus programs to help them stay afloat, help them catch up on their auto payments. So all of those things combining together are driving repossessions. We've heard from analysts that the numbers are already rising. They may rise to more historical levels, or they may surpass those. We'll have to see what the numbers show for the end of the year, but right now the numbers are increasing.
It really feels like kind of a perfect storm of things you identified there. Obviously, we all know the cost of cars has gone way up, but on top of that, the cost to drive them, gas has gone way up as well. That's on the high side. And then, as you mentioned, people are losing jobs. The stimulus isn't there anymore. The lenders aren't as lenient. So a lot of stuff going on. You actually profiled someone in your story who's going through this right now. Can you tell us a little bit about her experience?
Right. We heard from Esther Amaronier. She filed a complaint form with Contact 6, and she recently bought her very first car. She paid $6,000 down, and she had some very bad luck because less than a month after that, she suffered a stroke, and it left the right side of her body paralyzed. She can't use her right hand, which is her dominant hand, and she struggles with her leg. And she lives in an apartment complex with basement parking, so she can't even go down the stairs to get into her garage. Much less drive her car. Her doctor says you can't drive. She also can't work, so she is unable to make her monthly payments on her car. And she wrote to us saying that her vehicle is being repossessed, and she was told you'll likely lose your down payment of $6,000 and possibly more in fees and other lost value of the vehicle. She was told the dealership would buy her car back, but she wanted to know, is there any way you can help me get my down payment back? This was a lot of money for me. And we found out, unfortunately, she's not legally entitled to get her down payment back. So what she's doing is she's probably going to voluntarily surrender the car. We're told often that's not the best case for someone facing repossession because the car will probably go to auction where it's sold for a value less than what a person might get if they sell their car privately or to a dealership on their own. But this is the route Esther wants to go after a lot of conversations we had with her lender and with her seller. And she really just reached out to us because she thought this was unfair. She thought she had unique circumstances and she thought perhaps she could get some of that money back. She wishes she hadn't paid so much down, but we did learn, unfortunately, she's not entitled to get that down payment back.
I recall one of the comments she made in the story was that, how can they expect me to make these payments when I can't even get down the stairs and get to my car? But you interviewed a consumer attorney for the story who said, you know, as hard as that hardship may well be, that's not a cause for getting out of a contract like car payments, right?
Right, not on its own. So we spoke with a consumer attorney, Nathan DeLaDurante. This is one of his specialties. He says, hardship, no, it's not a defense on its own. There are steps consumers can take before it gets to repossession. That's what he advises, because once your car is gone, once it's repossessed, it's a whole lot harder to resolve a problem because you can't get to meetings, right? You can't get to work, you can't make money, and your problems from that point out really start to compound. You can't get to medical appointments, to school, and so on. It's a real issue. So he recommends reaching out to your lender before you get to that point, warning them, hey, I have an unexpected hardship. Can we work something out? Can we tack on more payments at the end of my loan? Can we spread out my next payment over a couple of months? And he said, lenders are more receptive to that because it is a hassle to repossess a car. And if they can find a way to work with the consumer and allow them to keep their car and eventually get the money that they're owed, that's preferable for everyone.
So the state of Wisconsin says repossessions are expected to rise this year. How does that compare sort of historically? They had been pretty historically low during the pandemic. Is that right?
Right. We're getting data from analysts across the country saying repossessions are climbing. We don't have the numbers in Wisconsin from the DOT for 2023 yet, but last year, the Wisconsin DOT processed about 9,500 repossessions. For comparison, in 2019, before the pandemic, it processed 17,000 almost. So that's quite a difference. And already this year, we're hearing that more consumers are defaulting on their auto payments. So the number of repossessions, as I said before, it's expected to climb back to more historical levels, even higher, given the prices of cars right now in the current market.
I don't know if it was in your story or elsewhere that I was reading about this, but just the average car payment is so different now than it was just maybe a few years ago. You're looking at people whose car payments, not for a luxury car, but just for an average vehicle that might be, you know, $600, $700, $800 a month, where that used to be reserved for luxury vehicles. So obviously a lot going on here. I imagine difficult for people who are you know, financially struggling to begin with to maintain those kind of payments.
That is true. And we wanted to put this information out there so people were aware of their rights if they face this kind of thing, because in Wisconsin, there are a number of rights that people do have in the face of repossession. You know, in Wisconsin, you should know that your car can be repossessed without a court order or court supervision. You aren't entitled to a day in court before this happens. That said, if a repo agent shows up and you tell them to stop, they must stop and take you to court instead. You don't have to yell. There are no magic words. Just say stop. On top of that, repossession can't happen unless your loan is in default. The creditors must provide notices and they cannot breach the peace when repossessing your car. They can't go into your garage or your home without your permission. And one thing that's good about saying, you know, I'd like this to go through court instead, is that court is a process that takes a long time, right? And that's time that you still have your car. You can go to work and maybe save up money and start making payments towards your car again and manage to keep it, come up with some sort of agreement with the lender in the meantime. There's nothing in the law that says your case has to be a winning one or that it has to stick, right? So that's an option that everybody has. Now, depending on the price of your car, whether it was $25,000 or less, there are different rights that you have in Wisconsin when it comes to being notified, the notification process. And if those steps are not followed, the consumer has the ability to sue for wrongful repossession. They can also do that if you tell someone to stop the repossession and they don't stop, if they make a scene. So we have more information on fox6now.com about your rights when facing repossession, because there are several.
You mentioned that when a repossession is occurring, that whoever's conducting the actual repo, they can't come into your garage to take your car. They can't come on, you know, into your property inside your house. But I imagine they can come onto your property, like the driveway, for instance. Is that right?
Right.
Does the consumer attorney you talk to, does he go so far as to recommend keep it in the garage if you don't want them? Because you said you can tell them to stop, but if you're not there to tell them to stop, then your car is gone.
He's often hearing from people after the fact. And what he would say is, let's try to stop this from happening in the first place. But if you feel like your repossession was wrongful, let's go through the process and see if that's the case. He says he doesn't advise hiding from the lender, right? Don't move and think they won't find you. Keep your address current because you don't want to miss any important notices. He says that's more important. They're going to find you anyway. And this process is going to play out in one form or another. So I don't think he would advise hiding your car or anything like that, because if someone tells him to stop, they can stop anyway. But I think he would just advise communicating, right? Talking this out ahead of time and finding a way to keep your car, because you don't want this on your credit report either. That could remain there for 7 years and have serious impacts there. So typically what will happen is they will repossess your car, or you'll have some sort of voluntary surrender arranged. They both will impact your credit score. And typically what will happen then is the lender is going to sell your car, or they may keep it, they'll probably sell it, and then apply that money to your outstanding balance. And if the car doesn't sell for enough to cover your debt and the cost of towing and those other fees, you may have to pay the difference. Now, in this case, Esther, she was able to work out an agreement where she won't have to pay all those extra fees and things. But voluntary surrender also gets you some good graces from the lender, and that might be helpful as well.
Is there, I think you mentioned another option is to go and sell this car privately. If you have the time and the means, the ability to go out and list the vehicle, and you can get someone to pay what it's worth, it may not be what you owe, but it may be better than it's going to get at auction. Is that right?
Right. The attorney we spoke with also recommended trying to sell it privately, especially if it's a used car, because used cars are selling for more these days. They advised Esther try that, but given the size of her down payment, that was a harder thing for her to try to get back in the money she could have made in a private sale or selling it to a dealership. But he advised, absolutely, take it around, get offers for what this car might be worth. And that, in many cases, is a better deal than having someone sell your car at auction. But I do want to say that we were able to speak with American Honda Finance, which is Esther's lender, and Russ Darrow, who sold her her car. We exchanged several emails with them. Both of them, I give them credit. They did call her. They did talk with her about their concerns. And in the end, Russ Darrow agreed to buy her vehicle back with no further money owed. And America Honda Finance said, we're not going to charge you anything else. There won't be any late fees or other fees that are associated with a repossession. And American Honda Finance said it thought that Russ Darrow's offer was a kind one. Esther still thinks it's unfair because she's not going to get her down payment back. But she also won't have to make any further payments on the vehicle, and she won't have to pay any penalties. So I can't say she's completely happy, but it could be worse.
Good thing to know what your rights are if this happens to you.
That's what we're always trying to do, teach people about their rights.
Now, another story that we're going to talk about here today that you have recently worked on has to do with something that is completely free, and it should be there for everyone who needs it, but it's not working very well. Let's talk about what's going on with the Milwaukee Riverwalk.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We're talking about rights, and there are rights that people with disabilities have when it comes to accessibility. And we heard from a man named Darren. Darren is a full-time wheelchair user, and he wrote to Contact 6 saying he loves visiting the Riverwalk with friends. And over the last few years, he's been having routine issues with broken lifts. So the Milwaukee Riverwalk is 20 blocks plus. It runs on both sides of the Milwaukee River toward Lake Michigan, and it's beautiful. It takes people past businesses, restaurants, art, and condos. It runs from Brewers Hill through the downtown to the Third Ward. There's lots of benches where you can sit. There's restaurant seating. You can watch the boats go by and the kayaks, and you can see lots of cream brick buildings, art exhibits. And the problem that Darren has encountered is that not everyone can enjoy it equally, and that's because of the broken lifts he's been encountering. So he invited us down there to check it out. So we went with him and we found the Riverwalk does have lifts and walkways and ramps that allow people of all levels of mobility to visit and travel it. But the problem is there are four lifts. One of them is right by the bronze fawns. So that's a marker for some of you. And Darren says he's encountered over the years that the lifts are often out of order. They're largely located around the Wisconsin Avenue, Water, and Wells Street areas. And we traveled the Riverwalk with him on April 11th. It was one of those gorgeous days we had. Remember those? It was like 70 degrees. It was beautiful. And we found that three out of four of the lifts were broken that day. And according to the city website, only one lift was listed as broken. And this is hard for people like Darren because he has to backtrack quite a way when he encounters a broken lift. His arms are already getting a workout, but then he has to go back up the ramp he just came down. He has to cross a bridge, go to the other side of the river, and then travel down to another lift, which will hopefully be operational. And that just takes time, and it takes away from his overall enjoyment of the experience and his visit to the Riverwalk.
And as I imagine, when I first read about or saw that you were doing a story on these lifts, my thought was, I've been down to the Riverwalk so many times, and because I don't need them, I've never really noticed why they're needed. But the Riverwalk, which goes all along the Milwaukee River, there are changes in elevation that if you are able-bodied and can just walk up a few stairs, no problem. And that's what these are for, right, is to get past those sections where there's the change in elevation.
Absolutely. And I'm with you. I've visited the Riverwalk many times and I did not notice these lifts. And they kind of look like decorative concrete pillars with an arched top and some embellishments, unless you look closely. And then you'll see they have glass windows in the side and doors at the bottom and the top. And how they work is you push a button to call it down. There's a loud whirring sound. And inside is a space large enough for a wheelchair. And then you press a button and it moves you upward. It's kind of slow, but it works. I will say one thing we didn't mention in our report, because this is just an unfortunate part of city life, I suppose. They do smell. It sounds like people urinate in them, so that's unfortunate. And one of the lifts we found working that day was filled with trash on the bottom, cardboard and cigarette butts. So maybe someone had slept there or visited there and didn't clean up after that themselves. So that's unfortunate. But the people who use these lifts are just glad they're there, but they would like them to work.
You mentioned something, I think, interesting about this setup, because I think, well, okay, is this a city of Milwaukee problem? Is this the city of Milwaukee? Is this a public entity, the Riverwalk? But there's actually kind of an interesting setup there. Can you talk a little bit about who's in charge of these lifts at the Riverwalk?
Absolutely. There is a public-private partnership in place that includes the city of Milwaukee and a business improvement district. And we reached out to them for the story. They are aware of the issues with the lifts, and they have taken steps to try to maintain them over the years. They say it's difficult to do that because this is Wisconsin. This is mechanical equipment outside in a public space with all this varying weather. So they said that maintaining these lifts and making sure they work has been a priority. And if someone does report a problem to them, or maybe a downtown ambassador comes across one of the lifts and tests it and sees it's not working, they do try to respond within a couple of days. They have a maintenance company that comes out and does preventative work and investigates out-of-service lifts. And actually, back in 2020, they did authorize a maintenance project on the lifts, which was completed. But then again, about a year later, they were already talking about ways to replace them all together with some better technology.
Well, and if this were just a matter of, hey, if the money's there, we'll do it, but some years there's just not money to go around, it'd be one thing. But this is not a luxury item. This is something, if I understand it from your story, that they are required to keep operational. Is that right?
Right. I think a lot of people have heard of something called the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that factors in here because about 20 years ago, there was a complaint filed with the United States Department of Justice, and it investigated the Milwaukee Riverwalk and found 28 potential violations of the ADA. And as part of that settlement that the city and the county and the district came to with the Department of Justice in 2006, they agreed to install lifts, walkways, and ramps and make this walkway accessible to all people. That project began in 2007, and they installed the final ramp in 2016. So it's not just something they want to do. It is something they have to do.
There is great power in publicity. One of the great things about Contact 6 is bringing public light to issues that might otherwise be sort of on the back burner. What has happened since you reached out to the Business Improvement District about this? What have you seen happen since then?
Well, one thing I did find out is that there are already plans in motion. I can't take credit for putting these plans in motion because they started this process a couple of years ago. They started looking into what it would cost and whether it would be feasible to replace all four lifts. The district hired a consultant to come in, and there is already a plan in place to replace all four lifts this year. It was back in March that the Business Improvement District executed a $150,000 contract to replace all four lifts. Right now, I'm told project drawings are under review, and replacement work is expected to begin by summer. There's a few more weeks that will be spent waiting for parts and so on. But the hope is that this will take place late spring, early summer, and that these lifts will have more advanced technology that will better sustain the outdoor conditions that just come with living in Wisconsin. So one thing we did notice after speaking with the city and speaking with the district about this is they did fix one of the lifts that was broken. So now there are two broken lifts, and there's more updated information on Milwaukee's website. Before it said just one lift was broken. Now it does accurately say that two are broken, and it offers alternate ways to get around the area. But I do think it's good to raise the profile on issues affecting people with mobility issues in the city, because they do run into a number of problems. We've talked about potholes on the news quite a bit lately. People in the wheelchair community tell me it's really difficult to navigate the city in general because of the number of potholes. They sometimes run into that crossing bridges on the Riverwalk as well. But this is something that they are supposed to be able to use. And it's just really disappointing that they can't use it the same as an able-bodied person.
You know, I think about the piece that you mentioned about just the trash inside them and the odor, that maybe there are certain things that the city can't, or the Business Improvement District can't, constantly maintain. But it just adds to the idea of the experience of someone who is just trying to navigate the city in the ways that any of the rest of us can. And it's sort of an indignity that they shouldn't have to face. But at the very least, they ought to know the thing's going to work and they can get up and down when they're supposed to.
Absolutely. And I will say that after we contacted the district and the city, the lift that was particularly dirty was cleaned out. It was perfectly clean by the time we visited it again. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that if someone wants to use the Riverwalk, they run into problems like that as well, as well as the mechanical issues. So I'm hoping that this goes smoothly and that I'll be getting a positive update from Darren by the end of the summer.
And it's time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering your question for which we have not prepared. And we're joined by Open Records executive producer Sarah Smith to ask that. But Sarah, I realize that's the line I always read. We're going to have a little fun by answering a question for which we are totally unprepared. I don't know how fun that is sometimes. But let's see.
Capital skills. F fun. That's what I would say. I feel like I try to make it fun. So, of course,
you make it fun.
All right. Good answer. Okay, thanks for having me. Bye. No. Okay, so here is the question. If you switched jobs with your spouse with zero training or preparation, who would get fired first? And then if you can, share what those careers are, what you would be switching for.
Jenna, if you don't mind, I'll just jump right in because
go for it.
I think, boy, who would get fired for? I mean, I think it would be me.
Maybe my wife, fired is like a really harsh thing. So, like, who would you be like, I quit?
Here's the thing. My wife is, she has worked from home before working from home was cool. She works for an insurance company. But she is, you know, so it's corporate world. It's very different from what I know. It's very corporate. There's a lot of corporate speak. She's on a lot of meetings. She runs a lot of meetings. She has to wrangle a lot of cats, and she is an outstanding documenter of what people are looking for. She's very, very good at documentation. One of the things that she does a lot of is work in spreadsheets, and you know I love spreadsheets. So I do pretty well there. But I think there's a lot of regulatory stuff that goes along with it, and just the wrangling of other people and that kind of organization. I don't know if that's my strong suit, and because I've never been a great delegator. I don't know that I can do a good job of organizing lots of people at one time. So I think I would probably fail. My wife is beautiful and she's charismatic and personable, and I think you put her on TV and people would probably like her more than they like me. So I'm going to say I would get fired first.
Yeah, you really would thrive with those spreadsheets. Any sort of like meme that's like talking about data and plotting, and I think of you all the time. So
I felt pretty good. I actually made my wife look good at work the other day because she had a question about a spreadsheet she was having to do some, you know, formulas on or conditional formatting or something, and I came right in and just with a snap of a finger I solved it, and she went into a meeting and looked like a hero. And so and you know, I was a hero husband that day. But nice, those are my limitations. Nice. That's my limitation.
Well, it's interesting because our spouses have the benefit of watching what we do. So I feel like they have some idea of what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. So they might be able to fake their way through a day. I mean, every job has its own tech and its own jargon and all sorts of things that you might not understand. But if you put someone in front of a camera and said, talk about what's happening here, they might be really nervous and they might be overwhelmed, but they could probably get through it. It might not be the best to watch, but they could get through it. Whereas if you put me in my husband's workplace, I would not know where to begin because he's an engineer. He's a civil engineer, which if you're describing that to like an elementary school student, it's the stuff on the ground and below. So it's stuff doing with water drainage and curbs and where sanitary sewer lines are going and all that stuff. So he works on, you know, building projects and parking lots and golf courses and all that stuff. But I don't understand any of that or how to calculate any of it. And I would be completely lost. And I would love for him to listen to me try to describe what he does because I'm probably doing it poorly. But I wouldn't even know where to begin. He's got all these plans, site plans and things laid out, and I don't even know how to read them. Whereas we're trying to write for people so they can understand it, someone might be able to push their way and figure that out. But I just, math jobs, engineering, couldn't do it.
Math jobs and map jobs, which right. So similar, like to play off of what Jenna's talking about, my husband he does GIS, which is Geographical Information Specialist or Systems or something. So mm-hmm. He does the same kind of stuff-ish that Jenna's husband does, but for a village. And so he's dealing with village planners and police departments and schools. So when I first met my husband, my directional knowledge was very limited. Still kind of is, but I was very much like, take a left at the McDonald's, where he's like, go west at 124th Street. And I'm like, what does that even mean? So I will say I'm much better now, thanks to him, but he deals with maps all day. And again, data points and CAD systems, whatever that means.
I hear those phrases too.
Yeah. So now for me, being behind the camera, I will say that my job is not in front of the camera. And so I think if Eric came in, he also would probably be like, what? however, again, I think he could probably write a script or two.
He could do that. But Sarah, I know how many things you do and so many. Yeah. You have your hands in so many things. And you do it so quickly, I don't know that your husband would be able to handle that. And
No, that's fair. But you're actually probably right. He would be like, and I have to do what else? So, mm-hmm. Whereas like, you know, Eric's jobs, and Jenna, maybe you could talk to this too. Like, I mean, a lot of his stuff takes a long time. They are projects. And so he chips away at stuff. Whereas like our deadlines are today at noon or tomorrow at 5, they're a little bit more tight and fast paced. Whereas like his job, you know, he's like, oh, that took me 2 weeks to do. I'm sorry, what? I don't even know what that is. So yeah, you're right. He probably wouldn't make it.
Well, Sarah, I want to ask you, because we're both married to guys in the engineering world, are you ever walking around with him and he goes, oh, this curb is so bad? Or like, where is the water going?
Yes.
This is
yes,
a terrible parking lot.
He'll be like, oh,
lot.
Look at that, that downspout, that sewer right there, that sewer grate. He knows, like, it's Eric all knows where all the sewer grates are in his village. So it's, I mean, yeah,
or you drive through a
wild.
Construction project and they're like, oh, no, that's not yeah. right. You're like, what? Yeah. Which part?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is I need to have your husband's over to figure out the drainage problem in my backyard. Is that right?
Actually,
they
yeah.
could probably figure it out.
Well, it looks like we're going to get together for a barbecue or something here real soon.
Yeah.
With an ulterior motive.
False pretenses.
You know, what's funny is, so my wife and I, we are both, and she would not have a problem with me saying this, she would admit it, we are both nerds. We are both, you know, whether it's book nerds or the whole Excel thing. But one thing that we found interesting about our two very disparate jobs, now she's in insurance now, but her background is in therapy. She was a licensed therapist. And so she has sort of that expertise. And then, of course, I interview a lot of people. And Jenna, you know this from interviewing so many people over the years. Then sometimes talking to people, convincing them to do an interview in the first place, but then talking to them about a very difficult subject, you almost play a little bit of a therapist along the way. You're a better interviewer if you are kind and understanding and empathetic, but also you have to know sort of how to redirect sometimes when people go off course. And we've compared our jobs at times and thought there's more overlap than you might think in that whole thing. I sometimes feel like I've become somewhat of a therapist in this job.
I sometimes feel like I've become an expert on things that I like. I talk to a doctor about this. I know all about it, whereas they have the degree. So sometimes I suffer from a temporary sense of confidence that I know just as much when clearly not.
But you know what? You just look at today. We talk about repossessions and then, how the Americans with Disabilities Act affects the Riverwalk. Those are two subjects that you had to become a fast expert on. And that's what it's like with every story. You sort of have to get this minimum amount of expertise on a whole lot of different things. So do you ever feel like you have like a little bit of knowledge about everything and not a lot of knowledge about anything?
That's true. I do think it's helpful at like a dinner party when you meet someone and you have some knowledge of like what they do or something very specific to ask a question about. So that's good. But yeah, it's like becoming a temporary expert in something and then moving on to the next thing.
Should we do this, Sarah? Should we do a bring our spouses to work day and have them try some, script writing and reporting?
It would be great. Although the one thing Eric would like, when I tell him sometimes things that I say to other people, sometimes I may cuss. And Eric goes, I would get fired in a second if I did that at my job. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's that.
The newsroom environment can be a little different than other corporate environments at times.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So I remember walking into my husband's job once, like a few workplaces ago. Yeah. And he's like, you're so loud.
That's what, yes, yes. They're so quiet and they're in their little cubicles, like high cubicles. So they're not talking to each other. They're doing their work. And I'm coming in like, hey, everybody, like chit-chatting my way down to his. So
imagine if they hung outside editor Dave Machuda's edit bay for a few hours.
Ooh.
That's a whole different story. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, please send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. Jenna, thank you for being on again this week.
You are very welcome.
And Sarah, thanks for joining us for the Off the Record segment.
Fun!
As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our editor, Dave Machuda. Please subscribe to Open Record if you haven't already. You can find it wherever you do your podcast listening. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.